This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Here with you, David Horowitz says of this new book, Erasing America, Losing Our Future by Destroying Our Past. James Robbins has written a richly informed book about the campaign to demonize America by erasing and then rewriting its history. This is a totalitarian agenda, and Americans who love their country should arm themselves with Robbins' book. On the line with us is James S. Robbins, the author of Erasing America, Losing Our Future by Destroying Our Past. James, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I should add that I don't see a website for you. Your Twitter handle is @James_Robbins, just like mine is Tom_Hartman. So, James, why do you want to memorialize traitors who fought to preserve slavery and took arms against America and killed 600,000 people? I mean, white supremacist Tim McVeigh also took up arms against America. Do you want a monument to him?
Oh, well, certainly not. I think a proper monument to him was the video of him being executed. I think that was just perfect for him.
Then why Robert E. Lee?
Why Robert E. Lee?
Well, Robert E. Lee killed a lot more Americans than Tim McVeigh.
Did he now? Well, you know, he thought that he was defending his country.
No, he didn't. And, he separated from his country.
What, Robert E. Lee didn't think he was defending his country?
No, he did not. He separated from his country. When you secede from the United States, you are not defending the United States. You are committing treason. He's a traitor.
Well, he was defending Virginia. That was his point of view.
Virginia is not the United States.
Well, but I'm telling you what his point of view
is. So you think that somebody who argued against
the premise that he was defending his country, but that's what he thought.
He did not think he was defending his country. You're right. He thought he was defending Virginia, or at least that part of Virginia that wanted to maintain slavery. But I don't understand what it is about treason that is so seductive to you guys.
Oh, well, is it really what I'm talking about? I'm not really talking about the Civil War, because this starts with the Civil War. It starts with Confederate monuments, and then pretty soon people want to take down George Washington, Thomas Jefferson.
Actually, those Confederate monuments were not put up during the Civil War. Most of those Confederate monuments were put up after Birth of a Nation came out in 1915 in this massive revival of the Klan across the South.
Oh, most of those a lot of those monuments were put up even before that. I mean, we can quibble.
Yeah, there were two periods. There was one in the 1880s. If you take a look at all the monuments across the United States to the Civil War generals, what you find is that about 80% of them were put up in two 10-year periods, one in the 1880s and the other in the late teens and the early 1920s. And in both cases, they followed a revival of the Ku Klux Klan, and they followed attempts to intimidate black people from voting.
Well, that's one theory.
No, it's supported by the evidence.
That's an interesting theory. Monuments were put up in North and South. They were put up by a variety of reasons, by a variety of people. The ones in the South were put up by Democrats. Democrats are now taking.
Democrats were the party of slavery until 1965. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, Democrats.
But the Democratic Party today has nothing to do with that.
Taking them down.
The Democratic Party today has nothing to do with that, James. Maybe you weren't alive in the 60s or haven't read that history, but the Democratic Party repudiated slavery and racism in the 1960s. The Republicans then stepped in to embrace it with something Richard Nixon called the Southern Strategy.
It's great that the Democrats caught up to the Republican Party, the traditional anti-slavery party. It's great that it took them 100 years to catch up.
I think you were talking over me when I said, and then the Republican Party with Richard Nixon's Southern Strategy in 1968, 3 years after the Voting Rights Act of 1965 was passed, stepped in to pick up that Southern racist vote.
Oh, that's really funny. I mean, it was Jimmy Carter who restored citizenship to Jefferson Davis, so whatever.
What does that have to do with anything?
What it has to do with is that people on the left want to bring back the Civil War, they want to refight the Civil War, and they want to use it as a tool of intimidation.
No, I would say if you want to do these blanket kind of indictments, the people on the left want to say
the Civil War is over and it's not worth relitigating. And this whole thing about Civil War monuments is just an attempt, it's the thin end of a wedge to question the entire basis of American history, the entire legacy of freedom of the United States. It extends to Jefferson, it extends to Washington, it extends to anybody that the left doesn't like.
Okay, so let's move along here. Why do you think black football players should be prevented from kneeling to protest police violence against black men? They're public figures, too.
I think that they should do their job, which is to play a game of sports. They are entertainers, and they should focus more on that. Their protest really has no place against the national anthem, and that the people are responding to this by tuning out the NFL in droves, which is a proper free choice to do.
So you want to suppress the right of African Americans to protest the murder of African Americans by police in the United States?
No, the NFL players can do all they want except during game time. In game time, they should focus on the game. They're employees of the league, and they should focus on that. If they want to use the millions and millions of dollars that they earn to start programs to help inner-city communities...
So are you joining me in calling for the NFL to stop the whole phony patriotism thing?
Taking a knee is cheap, my friend.
James,
it hurts the league.
We have limited time here. Filibustering does not help. Are you going to join me in calling for the NFL? You know, this whole thing with the Pledge of Allegiance and everything. Prior to, I think it was 2005, 2008, whatever year it was, the Army was desperately trying to recruit because, you know, George W. Bush broke the military with two illegal wars. And so they paid the NFL tens of millions of dollars to do this whole, you know, we're going to play the national anthem, we're going to, you know, salute the flag, and we're going to have military flyovers, and they're going to pass out recruiting literature in the stadiums at the end of the game. And this happened for, you know, a half a dozen years or so. And then the military stopped paying for it. When the military stopped paying for it, shouldn't we have stopped doing it? I mean, why do we want to militarize and nationalize a sporting event?
My friend, national anthems and flag ceremonies and things have been going on at football games since the 1950s. So the fact that the Defense Department...
Not in the NFL.
...some things and, you know, recruiting things...
Yes, no, this began when the NFL started taking money from the Pentagon.
Friend. Check your history. No, it did not. It's all in my book. It's easy to look up. You can go on YouTube and find videos of games from the 50s where they're playing the national anthem. And rules for players to show respect to the flag during the national anthem started in 1963.
Okay. All right. In that case, then you think that those rules are what we should be following and we should be imposing on these players. You know, tough luck, Charlie. You know, so they're trying to shoot you. You know, you can't do anything about it.
Well, you know, if the players want to show respect for the flag, I think that they should. There shouldn't have to be rules for that. You know, they should show a little respect for their country during their, million-dollar entertainment venues. And if they don't, then I think the NFL should fire them.
Okay. I guess we have a difference of opinion here. You say in your book that we are dissing Christopher Columbus's memory. I have a bit of a problem with that. I mean, Christopher Columbus started the first international sex trade operation. He wrote to the king of England or of Spain. He said 100 castellanos are as easy, Spanish coin are as easily obtained for a woman as a farm. And it's very general that there are plenty of dealers who go about looking for girls. Those from 9 to 10 years old are now in most demand. He gave a young Taino woman to his number two guy, Mr. Cueno, Miguel Cueno, who said, quote, Columbus gave me my own sex slave, a beautiful young girl who resisted with all her strength, leaving me no choice but to thrash her mercilessly and rape her. This is the guy that you think we should be celebrating?
The purpose of honoring Columbus, in addition to honoring the heritage of Italian Americans, which is one of the reasons why...
I think a lot of Italian Americans are embarrassed by this.
Oh, well, a lot of them are, but a lot of them also think that Columbus was somebody worth honoring and that Italy is something worth honoring.
What's worth honoring a guy who's a fortune hunter? Kills people and rapes people.
Hunter? Well, if people want to hunt fortunes, well, you know, what business is it of yours?
Well, that's my point. I mean, what business of it is our nation's in celebrating a guy who, you know, bumbled into this continent and then proceeded to murder people? I mean, he killed a couple of million Indians, the Tainos, in what's now Haiti and Dominican Republic. And, I mean, it literally wiped them out. It reached the point, this is, again, Cueno, the guy who was his number two guy on the boat. He said that as a result of the suffering and hard labor they have endured, the Indians choose and have chosen suicide. Occasionally, 100 have committed mass suicide. The women, exhausted by labor, have shunned conception and childbirth. Many, when pregnant, have taken something to abort and have aborted. Others have delivered, after delivery, have killed their children with their own hands so as not to leave them in such oppressive slavery. This is what we're supposed to be celebrating, James?
We celebrate with Columbus. What we celebrate are the consequences of his voyage, the discovery of the New World and everything.
The Vikings discovered the New World 500 years earlier.
Well, they didn't do much with it. But Columbus discovered it and did much with it. He's the guy who opened up the New World to the later waves of European exploration
and exploitation.
That from that, the United States and then South America.
So I'm assuming that you also celebrate the largest genocide in the history of the world.
The most consequential human migration in
history. So I'm assuming then that you're celebrating the largest genocide in the history of the world.
And freedom.
So I'm assuming, James, that you're celebrating the largest genocide in the history of the world. We killed somewhere between 40 and 100 million Native Americans on this continent over a 300, 400-year period. That's what you're celebrating?
Well, that was an unintended consequence of a lot of it. I mean, that had
unintended
to do with the transmission of disease. No, most of that was from disease, but that was
a lot of it was.
And don't go into this whole, smallpox blankets nonsense.
Well, it's not nonsense. It actually happened in Ohio, but that's not my point. I mean, Manifest Destiny, Jefferson opened up the West and directed the army to go out and kill Indians. You're denying that?
He directed the army to go kill Indians. That was his order, go kill Indians. That was his op order.
Clear the lands. I mean, what's the difference?
Well,
the book is Erasing America by James S. Robbins.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You can tweet him at James_Robbins. Thanks, James. We'll be back. And welcome back. Tony in Cleveland, Ohio. Hey, Tony, thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hi, Tom. What I really wanted to talk about, first of all, there's some comedian that was saying that Russia was racist. But Russia had Pushkin, who they idolized, and he was half black. His father was a slave. But really, the thing I really wanted to talk to you about was, why are we not asking the Republicans, are we a satellite of Russia yet?
Hmm. Okay. That's
because
a good
that's
question.
What they're pushing us to be.
Are we a satellite of Russia? Well, to the extent that Russia is not a small d democracy, but more of a small a autocracy, I think Donald Trump and the Republican Party certainly have been moving us in that direction. I mean, just blowing up the norms of normal governance. For example, refusing to allow President Obama to have his own nominee for the Supreme Court. I mean, that is pretty nuts, for example. I mean, just basically violating the rule of law and ignoring the Constitution. I'm pretty horrified by it. Tony, thanks. That's a good question. Are we a satellite of Russia yet? I don't think so, but, we'll see. George in Santee, California. Hey, George, what's up?
Yeah, good morning, Tom. On the subject of fake news, when I'm talking to my Trump-supporting friends, they like to say that what we call mainstream media or corporate media is liberal media.
Right.
And for me, that is an example of fake news, that is put out there knowing that it's a lie, that our corporate media is not fake news, but it's put out there to sway people's political and social opinions. Could you give me a good, simple definition of what fake news is?
Well, fake news is lies.
Yes, and I think the idea that the mainstream media is liberal is a very good example of fake news.
Yeah, I don't disagree. The first of all, facts have a liberal bias. The vast majority of Americans actually like the Social Security, Medicare. I think fairly soon you're going to see the vast majority of Americans wanting Medicare for all. Certainly the majority of Democrats do. The global warming is real. I mean, I don't know when that became a liberal thing. I guess what I think is happening here, George, I'm sorry.
Yes.
What is happening here, George, is that the definitions are being redefined. Conservative, my dad's version of conservative was, yes, we want progressive change, we want to move forward, but we do so slowly and incrementally so as not to destabilize society. You can't have too rapid a change or you'll get backlash and then society goes nuts. That was what conservatives believed. William F. Buckley said the modern-day conservative stands athwart the arc of history with his arm out, with his hand out, yelling, stop. Right? That was it. But today's conservatives are not that at all. Today's conservatives are corporatists. They want to do whatever is in the interest of the very rich and the big corporations. Period. Full stop. And they're willing to use racism to get there. They're willing to use sexism to get there. They're willing to use misogyny to get there. They're willing to use pretty much any awful thing to these so-called conservatives to get there. It's pretty amazing. George, thanks for the call. I agree. The liberal media is this show. But that's it. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. A lot of people still want to talk about the whole impeachment thing, and I'm down with that. Frank in Spokane. Hey, Frank, what's on your mind?
All righty. About this...
Yeah, you're on the air, Frank. Don't listen to your radio.
I realize that. And this impeaching, I'm not for it. The thing that worries me is Pence.
Mm.
Pence knows how to, you know, how to work all of this.
Yeah, he's one very slimy character, and he's a total toady for the Koch brothers.
You know this, I know this. However, let Mueller run his course and get moderate Democrats in office, as opposed to, you know, coming in with an attitude of we must, you know, impeach this man.
Yeah. I get it, Frank, and your point is well taken, and there's a lot of Democrats who agree with you. What is a moderate Democrat, though? Can you give me some examples of policy differences between moderate Democrats and liberal Democrats?
Lisa Brown up here.
Right.
And she's running against Kathy McMorris Rogers.
Right.
And it's really curious. You're close enough. Kathy McMorris Rogers is running these terrible ads, and Lisa Brown is running positive ads. Now, I'm a veteran. I didn't have heel spurs. I enlisted when I was 17 mm-hmm. in the Army, and fortunately, and this was in 1971, you know, I was sent overseas. But I've been going to the VA, and they're farming it out. I don't like that. They're trying to privatize the VA.
They've already privatized pieces of it. But my question, Frank, was
yes,
what is it that makes Lisa a moderate Democrat versus a progressive Democrat? I don't understand this.
In my opinion, progressive would come in with an attitude of, you know, we have to impeach.
What does that have to do with progressivism?
Pardon me?
I don't see where impeachment has anything to do with being progressive on things like thinking that we should have a stronger social security system rather than privatize it, thinking that we should have a stronger public education system rather than privatize it, thinking that we should have Medicare for all rather than Obamacare, or just going back to the system that we had before Obamacare.
I believe everybody should have what I have.
Then you're not a moderate Democrat. If you're talking
about the VA,
which is socialized medicine?
Yes, that's what I think everybody should have that.
Okay, then you're not a... it seems to me that moderate Democrat means a Democrat willing to get into bed with corporations.
Pardon me?
I said it seems to me that our definition of moderate Democrat, at least the definition that people like Chuck Todd use and Stephanie Ruhle use over on MSNBC, is a Democrat who's willing to take money from corporations and rich people and who will vote in the interests of corporations and rich people. Am I missing something here?
What I'm saying, I served this country. I feel that those I served for should have exactly what I have, is the VA.
Right. I agree. Medicare for All would be one step short of that.
Medicare for All.
Yeah, well, Medicare for All is not even the VA. I mean, the VA, your doctor actually works for the government. With Medicare for All, your doctor is still in private practice.
Very, very good.
Yeah.
Now, fact of matter is, if we don't put moderates in, if someone comes in with an attitude of, oh, let's impeach, we're taking our eye off the
Okay,
ball
so your definition of moderate means not willing to talk about impeachment.
No, because...
Okay, Frank, I'm sorry. I'm out of time. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Back with more of the news of the day and your calls right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And just a reminder, I've got a new book coming out. I finished writing it a few weeks ago. It's about our tentative title, my favorite title, but, you know, I would love your opinion on this, and I would love your opinion on this. My publisher has put together this survey. The tentative title that I've been working with is Shot Dead, The Hidden History of Guns in America. It's part of a series of books I'm writing. The next one is going to be on the Supreme Court. After that, I want to do one on neoliberalism. I want to do one on climate change. All of them will be like the hidden history of these things or something like that. So we're asking for your help in titling them. And we tweeted out a link to the SurveyMonkey thing where you can fill it out. It's also on our Facebook page. And it's on our website at tomhartman.com. So just an FYI. So people are calling and weighing in on thoughts on whether or not we should be impeaching Trump or talking whether Democrats should even run on impeachment or whether we should just, you know, keep our mouths shut and wait for Mueller's report or what. What do we do? Brian in Fort Collins, Colorado. Hey, Brian, your thoughts.
Hello, Tom. So in my mind, as a matter of principle, Donald Trump definitely should be impeached. But the problem is, as a matter of politics, I'm not sure that's going to work out very well because, back to an earlier caller, you get rid of Trump and you end up with Pence.
But what could Pence possibly do that's worse than what Trump has done? I mean, Trump has tried to overthrow the tax exemption or, you know, the limit on tax exemption for churches. Trump has threatened to go to war with Turkey, essentially, over a right-wing religious pastor. Trump has, I mean, Trump's got the evangelicals solidly behind him. He's been throwing them bones left and right. He's you know, trashed trans people in the military. I mean, you know, what possibly could Pence do that's more than Trump has done?
Well, but the thing is, if you get Pence, then you have a candidate that is much more serious in 2020 because
I'm not afraid of Mike Pence. I've debated Mike Pence. Mike Pence is a weasel. I think Mike Pence will melt under the public scrutiny if the media, you know, takes him at all seriously.
Yeah, but Tom, in 2020, just follow my chain of reasoning here.
Right.
So, in 2020, if Trump is still in office and he's been checked by a Democratic House of Representatives at the least, and perhaps a majority in the Senate. So he's been rendered somewhat toothless, but so then he's still in charge of the executive and performing all kinds of mischief. But if he is removed from office, you've got Pence there that already, Republicans and independents, I just think they'll be much more likely to vote for him than it would be Trump in 2020.
Yeah, you may be right. You may well be right, Brian. And you know, that kind of discounts that we would have a strong candidate on the Democratic side, which I'm I'm confident we're going to have a strong candidate or a strong campaign, a candidate for both president and vice president in 2020. But your point is that it's unlikely that Trump will get removed from office anyway. You don't have two-thirds of the Senate, and even if you did, you probably wouldn't have a united Democratic Party around this issue for the reasons that you're talking about, that Pence would be a stronger candidate in 2020 than Trump. On the other hand, don't underestimate Trump's ability to either A, turn out his base, or B, possibly start a second American Civil War.
Yeah. I hear you, Tom. It's just...
I mean, there's a danger here, isn't there?
For,
Yeah.
It's just food for thought.
Yeah, I get it. Thank you very much. I appreciate the call, Brian. Sheila in Talent, Oregon. You wanted to, I think, echo Brian's perspective?
No.
Okay.
My feeling, well, part of it. One, the question is, should the Democrats talk up impeachment? Should that be their focus?
Right.
And I don't believe it should be the focus. I think that Mueller is going to get the goods on them. And if he does, it's not going to matter one bit. If we don't take back Congress, if the Democrats don't take Congress in this next election, which
you're right.
I wish people would stop calling the midterms. These are congressional elections,
yep.
And state legislate. They are as important. I'm getting angry from from two of your other callers. But they are equally as important in this democracy as the presidency.
Mm.
We don't just have a king. We don't have a one ruler. We do have one who thinks he would be king. But so I would like their focus to be, when I heard Netroots Nation, I listened to Kevin DeLeon, who I think is an excellent speaker and someone I thought, geez, this kid's going to go somewhere, to Ocasio-Cortez and to Julian Castro.
Mm-hmm.
And their focus was what we need, what the Democrats can bring to the table that the Republicans are not doing. They talk it, but they don't do it. I want them to talk about the infrastructure that is not getting funding. How many school buses in the U.S. have to plunge into the Ohio, the Missouri, the Mississippi, or the Columbia because the bridge was built in the 50s, like the one in Italy?
Yeah.
And we need to talk about... We need to talk about health care. I'm a retired critical care nurse. I know what happens when people don't have health care. I know that the consequences can be death. And it's not death of just senior citizens who, you know, are pinching like I am starting to with their medication. We are seeing young people who don't have it. We are seeing people who have no access who said, well, you know, I can't go see a doctor. I don't have the money. I have these other debts I have to take care of.
Yeah.
There's also, we need to talk about racism. It is hitting my family directly and personally. And racism is real, institutional racism. We need to talk about a criminal justice system that is freaking crazy. I'm tired of the, you know, we give so much airtime to the wanker in the White House. Excuse, that is a swear word, so don't, but it's an English swear word that my mother was tossing around a few times.
And a bloody good one. Yes.
It is a bloody good one. And tosser too, and then I won't go further than that because then they get really nasty. But we need to talk about what we can do. And one of the things that needs to be focused on is this tax bill that people think they got something good for it. It's going, as long as Republicans are in office, the middle class taxes will go up. So if the middle class care about whether they're going to send their kids to college, they need to realize that the Republicans are not going to help them.
Yeah.
I want them to talk about the increasing poverty in this country.
Sheila,
okay,
I get it.
I'm done. I
absolutely get it. And you've got a good list of issues, and I agree. Democrats need to be running on the issues. That's not the question, though. The question is, should we also talk about impeachment? I think that we're capable of chewing gum and walking at the same time.
Absolutely. And when the question comes up, then everyone who's running should say, yes. Yes, I would vote for impeachment. Yes, this man needs to go.
Yeah.
And as far as Pence, we'll deal with Pence when he comes along. He may go with him. We don't know how much Pence knew.
I agree. Pence was in charge of the transition. I think it's entirely possible that you're going to find Pence is up to his eyeballs in this stuff. Sheila, thank you. Excellent perspective. I appreciate it. It's great to hear from you. Carolyn in Hame, Texas. Am I saying that right, Carolyn?
Yes, you are.
What's up?
Well, I actually disagree. I don't think that we should be discussing impeachment of Trump. For two reasons. One, there is not one shred of evidence that has been presented to the American people of any Russian collusion whatsoever.
Trump has admitted to it. He admitted to it in a tweet last week. He said that they had a meeting with Russian lawyers and Russian officials in Trump Tower in order to discuss getting from Russia information about Hillary Clinton.
No, that's not what he said. That lawyer was not a Russian official. She had at one time worked for the Russian government as a prosecutor, but she was in private practice.
Sheila, the email that they got, excuse me, Carolyn, the email that they got, and you could read these. I mean, you know, it's Donald Trump Jr. publicly put these things out. The email that they got said, the Russian government would like to help you.
Well, I mean,
that was the email from Algorov. I think it was Algorov, from the Russian oligarch who set the meeting up. He was like, the Russian government would like to help you. And Donald Trump Jr. is like, cool, bring it on.
An oligarch is not a member of the Russian government.
Well, how is Donald Trump Jr. to know that when the guy represents himself as a representative of the Russian government?
So it's not against the law to go and meet with them. It is against the law to actually say, okay, give me the evidence. But there was no evidence presented. It was about adoption, and so
it wasn't about adoption. It was about the Magnitsky Act, which is, you know, the Russians stopped American adoptions of Russian children in protest of the fact that their oligarchs were being financially hurt by the Magnitsky Act. And so, you know, that wasn't about adoptions. That was about, loosening up the sanctions in exchange for helping Donald Trump become president. I don't see how that is not an impeachable crime.
There is nothing, there is no crime of talking to someone.
Conspiracy to defraud the United States is a crime.
There is no defraud. He didn't get any money from the government.
He got something of value. He got Hillary Clinton's emails.
Those were all, you know, he did not.
He did. They were transported into the public domain via WikiLeaks from the Russians to WikiLeaks to the public domain.
There is no evidence to prove that.
At the request of Donald Trump.
No, there is no evidence to prove that. I mean, just because he said it
Carolyn, he's confessed to it. And, Carolyn, you need to go back and read the email chain between Don Jr. and the guys who brought this information. It is so obvious. Carolyn, thank you for the call. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We're going to check in with Talk Media News in about 4 minutes and find out what's going on in the world today. Stick around. And welcome back. Rocco in Rosendale, New York, listening to us on Progressive Voices. Hey, Rocco, what's up?
Well, you know, I don't think that impeachment goes far enough. It appears that the GOP has abandoned most of its core principles and become a racketeer-influenced corrupt organization.
So you're calling for a RICO investigation and prosecution?
Yes.
I'm with that. I'm down with that. Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Okay. You know, every day that goes by, they have a new crime against the American people that concentrates the wealth in the hands of oligarchs. The oligarchy pays them with donations that underpin their political careers. Without these donations, which are basically bribes, these predators would be out of a job. So, you know, and then they go on and they dismantle every cabinet office that's been appointed by this president. It's absurd. This is criminal on a massive scale, and it should be brought to the American people to understand that the entire GOP is guilty. Because if Trump knew, Pence knew. If Pence knew, McConnell knew. If McConnell knew, the Speaker of the House knew, and down and down and down the line.
I believe you're right, and I am hopeful that the Mueller investigation, if this is true, I mean, if it's not true, I would like these guys to be exonerated. But if it is true, then we need to lay the evidence before the American people and the world, and then, you know, an appropriate action will be taken. But should we be talking about that kind of a, well, actually, you're making a strong case not just for impeachment, but for actual prosecution. And but the oligarchy has been certified as acceptable by the Supreme Court. I mean, the Supreme Court arguably created the modern American oligarchy in 1976 in the Buckley versus Vallejo decision, when they said that it's illegal it's unconstitutional to pass laws that restrict campaign contributions.
Well, that's got to be changed.
Yeah, I think so. But it's not going to be changed. Now that you've got, you know, an illegitimate Trump presidency who is appointing two Supreme Court justices that should have been appointed by a Democratic president. You had the illegitimate Bush presidency who appointed two Supreme Court justices that should have been appointed by a Democratic president. Hell, Ronald Reagan appointed two, maybe three Supreme Court justices, and he stole an election. It's like, we've got a big problem with our Supreme Court here.
It goes all the way back to Reagan. It goes all the way back to Reagan.
It seems like everything does.
Yep.
So... Okay, thank you very much for the call. We should be prosecuting these guys rather than just impeaching Trump. So what are the crimes that we would prosecute them for? Look at what Scott Pruitt has done. You know, taking global warming off the website of the EPA when global warming represents an existential threat, not just to the United States, not just to our military power, not just to our economic power, not just to the health of our people, but to the survival of the human race. And we're going to take that up. Excuse me. This is just, you know, it's outrageous. It's beyond the pale. We'll be back. Bob Ney is going to be with us in just a moment with Talk Media News. It's coming up on 10 minutes before the hour. Stick around. We'll be right back. Check in with Bob Ney at Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. This report brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and Loving What You Do, Ellen Ratner's new book. Bob is on the line with us. He's the author of Sideswiped, former Republican congressman from Ohio. Congressman, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Tom.
Great to have you with us, Bob. So what's going on in the world today?
Have you talked yet about the lunch strategy with the two Trump attorneys at the BLT stake yet?
I know nothing about this.
Oh, you're going to love this one, okay? As we know, and I want to make a disclosure here, Don McGahn at one point in time did work for me with the Republican Congressional Campaign Committee for me and others, and also gave us advice during the campaign finance reform debate as a lawyer. So I just wanted to make sure I got that out there.
Interesting.
Okay.
Okay.
So I know him. I've had dinner and lunch with him. Not in the last 3 years or four, but before. And so the interest, obviously, with the Don McGahn story is fascinating. We know now that he has spent 30 hours, when there's a lot of speculation, with Mueller, being questioned, of course, by the Mueller investigation team. Now, the reason he's been sitting down with him, because, by the way, Tom, he was completely opposed to opening up to Mueller in the beginning. Now, to McGahn's credit, excuse me, he did threaten to resign if, in fact, Trump carried out the threat to go through Sessions to fire Mueller. So he did do that. But he did not believe in an open strategy. The two lawyers that are no longer in the service with Trump, Dowd, John Dowd and Ty Cobb, those two lawyers, they're no longer employed. Those two lawyers had lunch at the BLT Steak, which, of course, is a popular D.C. steakhouse. And that was in a report from September 2017. During that lunch, what ended up happening is, this was the quote from the lunch, because there was a reporter that happened to be sitting at the next table.
Oh, that's right. I remember this now. Yeah.
Right. Well, here's the quote. "The White House counsel's office is being very conservative with this stuff," said Cobb, as he told Dowd. "Our view is we're not hiding anything." Referring to Don McGahn, he said, quote, "He's got a couple of documents locked in a safe." Then Cobb expressed concern about another White House lawyer and said, quote, "I've got some reservations about one of them. I think he's a McGahn spy." So, of course, this got reported. So then Don McGahn and his lawyer, as we understand it from what we found out, William Burke, could not understand why President Trump was so willing to allow Don McGahn to speak, because they said to Don McGahn, "You can go speak to Mueller."
Right.
So McGahn started to fear, according to reports within the White House, that he was being set up to take the fall. And, of course, one would think that because if the president's lawyers are sitting there talking about you at the BLT steakhouse, openly at a table, one would think you're going to take a fall. So, therefore, McGahn has spoken. Now, is he going to the level of where you know, he's exaggerating anything on the president? I highly doubt it.
Yeah.
Would he be telling the truth? You know, we're not in the room, so we assume. The only thing that is the follow-up to this, though, Tom, whatever McGahn says, unless Mueller can act on it, then it's incumbent upon Trump at some point in time to be deposed as the president. Then you see what McGahn said, and then you see what Trump said. So,
Bob,
I think that leads...
So the conclusion of all this is what?
Well, so my conclusion of this is that Trump will never, ever, under any circumstances, sit down with Mueller, because they will look at whatever McGahn said, and they will ask Trump. And again, if he doesn't sit down with him, then what happens to him? Unless
here's let me lay out my theory on this, okay. Bob, and I'd love you to reality check it.
Sure.
Donald Trump has a long history of lying to everybody in sight, including his own lawyers. And you see this in a number of depositions over the years that had to do with business matters, where his lawyers were blindsided when he finally got in and had to testify under oath and turned out and, you know, admitted that he had just openly lied even to his own lawyers about the issues. I'm thinking that Trump knew that they were that his son and other people in the campaign had reached out to Russian sources to try to get the dirt on Hillary. He did it himself in a speech, you know, famously, et cetera, et cetera. But he knew that there was collusion going on and, you know, a conspiracy. And he lied to his own lawyers that in the very early days, the White House lawyers, the ones who were employees of the White House as opposed to employees of Trump, they came to him and they said, okay, is this true? And he said, no, of course not. You know, we were no collusion. You know, everything's good. And they were like, okay, well, we've got to come up with a strategy to deal with Bob Mueller. And Trump is like, well, I didn't do anything wrong. And so they're saying, okay, well, in that case, then we should just give him everything so that he'll figure out that you didn't do anything wrong. And that'll be the end of the investigation, right? And Trump is like, at that point, he's kind of backed into a corner by his own lie, and he says, oh yeah, sure, go ahead and do that. And so Don McGahn goes out and says, okay, here's everything I've got. And then as time passes, you discover, Don McGahn discovers that Trump has been lying to his own lawyers and lying to Don McGahn and you know, would have been lying to Mueller. And at that point, you know, Don McGahn starts going, whoa, I've got some liability here because I repeated those lies to Mueller early on, so I've got to go back and talk to him again. And that now McGahn is like, you know, whether Trump was setting him up to take the fall or not, he could see that he could take the fall. And so now Trump has been caught by his own lies. What do you think?
Well, I agree, because Trump didn't set McGahn up. What Trump did was set up Cobb and Dowd by telling him there was nothing to worry about, and then they indirectly set all this up. So not
right.
Trump caused all of this.
Right, yeah, by his being a pathological
Absolutely.
Liar, essentially.
They believed him.
Yeah, there you go. Any lawyer who believes Donald Trump deserves what they get. Bob Ney, thank you so much, Bob.
Okay, thank you.
We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.